Thank you, Phil. I'd like to thank Phil for providing me the opportunity to do the 2008 review. Last year's review ended in October, so that's where I started again, and my review ends at October 2008. The bibliography references are those that are published during that time, and like Phil said, they will be at the network after the meeting. Okay, I'm going to focus on insecticide resistance. It's been a while since we had a review on that, and actually very opportune. Mark Whalen and colleagues actually went ahead and published a book on global pesticide resistance in arthropods. And the veterinary part is was a little bit of that, and I think that that will start us out. The purpose of the book, the author state, is to basically update the global community on the status of arthropod resistance and provides an update from Georgios 91 FAO publication, and it also corrects the number of pesticide resistance cases reported since 1914. They state that nearly 7,800 cases of global pest resistance are recorded. This includes the agricultural as well as medical and veterinary pests. The first couple of chapters by those authors, they focus on their arthropod resistance database, and this was housed in the Pesticide Research Center at Michigan State University and was started in 1993. The center continues to publish an electronic publication called Resistance Pest Management Newsletter, and the web address is down there. In their book, they state that the greatest number of veterinary arthropod resistance cases by mode of action are actually the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors and the sodium channel modulators. And this actually mirrors the resistance spectrum in the agricultural area as well. In the realm of global pest resistance, from their database is that Diptera is the main order in the veterinary field with 415 cases, and the top two were the housefly and the sheep blowfly. Next is the Acari, and actually the Ixodids, although they have not as many cases, it's actually the greatest number of species that has been reported so far. And the two top ticks are Rhizocephalus microplus and Decoloratus. Siphonaptera is next with 8 species from 76 cases. Top two again, cat flea and oriental rat flea. And then we have one Coleoptera species with actually several cases being reported on that. In my search, I found that there were 19 publications on that, and actually the ranking follows what we saw in the global resistance book. Diptera, during this period of my review, turned up 10 papers. The majority were houseflies, and we had one Australian sheep blowfly. Next is the Acari, 4 cattle fever ticks, and Sarcoptes canis. And again, Coleoptera with 3 reports, and it focused around the lesser mealworm. We also had a Siphonaptera, which was a cat flea. And we had 4 review articles, which I'll briefly touch on at the end of the presentation. Now I'm going to focus on 2 groups. I'm going to focus on housefly resistance and then southern cattle tick resistance. Zhang and co-workers looked at beta cypermethrin resistance, and they went ahead and looked at houseflies selected with beta cypermethrin at nearly 4,500 fold through topical application. They found that carboxyesterase was greatly elevated, although glutathione S-transferase was not really a player. The elevated carboxyesterase resulted in cross-resistance to Vapona and Foxum, as well as Propoxir and Abamectin. Also, results from their study using bioassays with synergists and biochemical assays indicated that esterase-mediated resistance due to an esterase gene or genes amplification may be the major mechanism for the high-level resistance seen in the beta-cypermethrin study. monooxygenase-mediated resistance, for example, P450s, and reduced target site sensitivities were not really main mechanisms. Another paper by Zhang looked at inheritance in the beta-cypermethrin system and found that resistance was inherited as a single major autosomal and completely recessive factor. Now, because of this, because there's going to be a single gene that is involved in that, resistance will develop more rapidly. So the authors suggested for insecticide resistance management that refugia using high-dose insecticide applications aimed at the heterozygous populations would be expected to work in this scenario. And then also, obviously, additional rotational schemes using different modes of action should also be adopted in that scenario. Phil Kaufman and associates looked at the susceptibility of imidacloprid. Now, imidacloprid, as most of you may or may not know, is a neonicotinoid insecticide which affects the neonicotinoid acetylcholine receptor. And this acts on the central nervous system, causing paralysis, which then leads to death in a few hours. What their study did was they went ahead and took several populations from New York and Florida for dairies, several populations for poultry out of New York, and then some hog farms in North Carolina. They evaluated these populations in no choice feeding assays of dental wicks treated with imidacloprid and sugar water. And what they found on the adapting some of their data to the slide on that is basically that they found a certain degree of cross resistance, anywhere from 3 to 8-fold on that. Now, one thing that we'll touch on at the end of this particular paper is that they've also looked at several resistant lab strains, but I want to focus on two here. The wiper lab strain is a Japanese multi-resistant strain by selection of permethrin which had as mechanism super KDR and monooxygenase mediated detoxification. So you see there's about a 6-fold cross resistance to that. That may become important in a few minutes. Also, there was an LPR lab strain that was pyrethroid resistant that had the P450 as the main detoxification mechanism, and that was around 2-fold. Also, what they did in this particular study is they looked at percent survival of several of those strains using a diagnostic concentration twice times the LC99. Now, that should produce 100% mortality. If you look here, we have on the bottom percent survival. If you look at the 2004, the Sullivan, New York, had 64% of the individuals survived. Also, too, if you notice here, is there's quite a bit of survival also happening in there. In 2005, the New York strains still were quite resistant, where there was a lot of survival going on. But also up here on the top two, I want you to focus on the California strains. They looked at that had been purposely exposed to QuickBait, which is a commercial formulation of imidacloprid, and they wanted to look at what was happening with that. Well, we've got also too quite a bit of survival. And then when you looked at when you added another population that had also been exposed to QuickBait on that, you've got considerable amount of survival exceeding in some cases 50%. So the authors conclude that low levels of cross-resistant existed in their housefly populations to imidacloprid. But as a result, there may be occasional failures where this insecticide may be less effective than others. Furthermore, intensive use of this chemical may result in the further evolution of resistance depending on initial susceptibility, as we saw in the California populations. Also, expression of imidacloprid resistance relative to pyrethroid resistance, for example, that YPER Japanese strain that I talked about earlier, may be a predisposing factor to cross-resistance, but remains to be investigated. Christensen in Denmark looked at susceptibility of thymethoxam to house flies, and this is what's considered a second-generation neonicotinoid, which is synthesized from the thionicotinoid subclass of the neonicotinoids. It also acts on the neonicotinoid acetylcholine receptor, but also this product has multiple uses, and one of them is agricultural as seed, foliar, and soil treatments. So there is actually a component of additional activation after ingestion, which is interesting. The authors also previously looked at substantial resistance to spinosad, which is also a neonicotinoid in houseflies, resistant to conventional insecticides. So they wanted to see what was going to happen to the thymethoxam. There were two studies involved. One is susceptibility to 30 populations, 15 hog farms, 21 dairy farms, and the remainder were mixed livestock operations. 26 of those 30 farms used conventional insecticides, and the others either used nothing or biocontrol. In that second study, they also looked at 10 housefly populations assessed after the use of neonicotinoid baits. Susceptibilities in all those studies used no choice feeding assays where they actually made up a bait by themselves, and actually used adult males in this paper as their test subjects. Okay, so what I generally is the 72-hour LC 50s varied anywhere from 6 to 76. That's for the whole study. In 2000, nearly 60% of the populations were between 10 and 20-fold resistant, although there was an average factor of about 15-fold resistant. Is, like I say, the majority were quite resistant on that. In 2001, 35% of the populations in this graph were around between 20 and 30-fold resistant. If we look then at 2005, where we had exposure now to the neonicotinoid baits, we find that 40% of the populations were partitioned between 10 and 20-fold resistant, and the other 40% 50 to 60-fold resistant. And then in 2006, 40% of the populations were 30 to fold resistant. So we're seeing, again, same sort of thing, is that if you're as they get exposed to the baits, resistance increases. They also looked at the cross resistance potential with thiamethoxam as well as the imidacloprid. And they found that actually a couple of the populations in 2005 were quite a bit of cross-resistance potential. And then when they went ahead and went back and looked at populations, again, they found even more cross-resistance. So they found out that there actually was a fairly high correlation on the toxicities of both of these populations. This leads the authors to conclude that cross-resistance between imidacloprid and thymethoxam, when used as alternatives for replacements for each other, should be omitted. There's also some risk of unknown magnitude in using spinosad as an alternative to neonicotinoids because both types of insecticides are neonicotinic activators. Jeff Scott did a sort of a quickie review in looking at unraveling the mystery of spinosad resistance in insects. And as you may know, spinosad is derived from a bacterium. And not only does it affect the neonicotinic acetylcholine receptor, but there's also a secondary site that uses the GABA receptor. Generally, he stated that spinosad resistance has been characterized in a number of insects, and it's generally monofactorial, recessive, does not respond to synergists, and occurs on autosome 1 of houseflies. He also stated that resistance in houseflies may be due to the altered target site, but no cross-resistance was detected to other insecticides, including imidacloprid, which we just talked about, cyclodienes, abamectin, or fipronil. Now we're going to go ahead and leave the housefly realm and go now into ticks and look at the southern cattle tick. As most of you may know, it is a vector of Babesia, which is known as cattle fever. It's been eradicated from the U.S. in the 1940s after intensive efforts by the USDA on the cattle tick eradication program. Quarantine still continues at the Texas-Mexico border, and due to the heavy use of enterocides in the program, resistance was developed to the OPs in the 1980s. They started using OPs, specifically Cumafloss, in those in the tick eradication project. In the 1990s, pyrethroids then started. They started detecting resistance to that, and then Amitraz in 2001. Currently, ivermectin is used to a great degree in Mexico. And as a side note, DDT was never used in the eradication project. Pyrethroid resistance is a very real problem in this system, and previous research demonstrated that enhanced metabolic detoxification using the esterase CZEST9 was responsible for this. Also, insensitive target sites using the KDR was also present. But the most common mechanism is a sodium channel mutation, which provides high resistance due to the substitution of phenylalanine by isoleucine. They also found that permethrin inheritance was inherited by a incomplete recessive trait involving a single autosomal gene. This was recently published by Liu in 2008. And also too is other minor genes might also exist that might have the modifying effects on the expression of the major gene demonstrated by large deviations shown in these circles in mortality from reciprocal back crosses of the RS and the RRs, and where these arrows are is actually the expected. And you see the higher ones right above those circles, that's the observed. That's what they're talking about. In their synergist bioassays, they dismissed involvement of overexpressed esterases. Although the genetic basis was revealed, the actual mechanisms are unknown, as stated by the authors. However, they did have a surprising finding, was that the F3 larvae selected with Amitraz resulted in an increase in permethrin resistance and vice versa, leading the authors to suggest and conclude that the genes conferring resistance to permethrin and Amitraz were tightly linked. On this paper in 2008, the inheritance of pyrethroid resistance and the sodium channel mutation was looked at. The study looked at a genotype resistance frequencies from heterozygous crosses and back crosses. They used the homozygous pyrethroid strain that was further selected by permethrin. And what they found is when they mated resistant males with susceptible females, it produced males that were completely resistant to deltamethrin and flumethrin, and to a certain extent cypermethrin, leading the authors to conclude that resistance was controlled by one gene with a maternal effect, which made resistance probably due to more than one mechanisms. Then they did the reciprocal cross using susceptible males times resistant males and produced females that were not as resistant to cypermethrin, deltamethrin, or flumethrin. So therefore, resistance was inherited as a partially recessive condition. The authors state that prediction of pyrethroid resistance based on genotype frequencies could have an impact on the rationale and rotational use of acaricides for improvement of resistance mitigation programs. Another paper by Guerrero and colleagues looked at the transcriptional regulation of pyrethroid resistance, where they cloned and sequenced the entire coding region. They were disappointed in finding that the CZEST9 resistance-related promoter elements were not there. However, the determination of this gene structure makes available an arachnid gene promoter region that would be useful in genetic transformation experiments with ticks or tick cell lines. Furthermore, the authors state that promoter sequence information coupled with a metabolic esterase gene microarray chip might enable the identification of DNA sequence promoter elements in response to pesticides, which then may lead to the development of novel acaricides that could overcome the presence of specific metabolic detoxification mechanisms in this tick. The last paper that I'll be talking about is actually using the mixture of deltamethrin and amitraz for the control of rhizocephalus. Deltamethrin and amitraz was used separately for tick control in for the past decade in New Caledonia, and they used two multi-resistant tick strains from two dairy farms. They found that certain synergism occurred when deltamethrin concentrations were relatively high, but not vice versa, leading to by using then this scenario, they led to dramatic increases in the percent reduction of immature and adult ticks on cattle. The four review articles that I came across is Orizon looked at insecticide resistance in the hornfly and alternative control strategies. He talked about breed selection for hornfly resistant cattle, looked at biocontrol using dung beetles, spalangia, and then BT toxic strains. And they also discussed vaccines. Jeff Scott talked about insect cytochromes thinking beyond detoxification, basically thinking beyond the box. And he stated that while studies on xenobiotic metabolizing P450s will obviously continue to be important, new and perhaps revolutionary information may become available from studies that look at P450s not responsible for metabolizing xenobiotics. And then we talked briefly about his review article on unraveling the mystery of spinosad resistance, so I won't go over that again. Sauerlin reviewed pyrethroids knockdown resistance in sodium channels and basically summarized the progress in the field in understanding pyrethroid resistance at the molecular level, with particular emphasis on studies in the housefly. As I stated earlier, is that the bibliography will be posted on the network, and I'm also going to post it on my center's website. Also, the PowerPoint presentation will be posted on my website, too. Thank you.